Next speaker is Emily Christ with Georgia Tech, modeling heat stress for cotton in the humid southeast using air temperature and vapor pressure.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming to this talk. The title of this talk is Modeling Heat Stress for Cotton in the Humid Southeast Using Air Temperature and Relative Humidity. This project is sponsored by Cotton Incorporated. Thanks so much for that. And it's a collaborative effort among the Georgia Institute of Technology, the University of Georgia, and the University of Arkansas. My co-authors I'd like to mention are Peter Webster, John Snyder, Violetta Toma, Derek Oosterhaus, and Daryl Chastain. So why would we want to develop a model for heat stress for cotton in the first place? Well, some previous studies have shown that exposure to high temperature can lead to a number of changes to the cotton plant, including reduced photosynthesis, increased respiration and photorespiration, decreased metabolism and decreased pollination, fertilization and growth rates. And these changes lead to decreased flower setting, productivity, and which ultimately lead to decreased fiber quality, boll load and yield. And of course, these are results that no producer wants to see. And one might say, well, that's fine and good, but at the end of the day, what can we do about reducing losses that occur as a result of high temperature stress? Well, if we could begin by building an accurate model of canopy temperature, and this would allow us the possibility to forecast canopy temperature. And if we can forecast canopy temperature, then producers could be warned, possibly, when cotton will experience heat stress. Once warned, they could take steps to make sure the crop's well irrigated. And maybe in the future, there could be some spray application to prevent damage. So there are some other possibilities out there. And hopefully this could result in reduced losses at the end of the growing season. So in order to develop a model for canopy temperature in the southeast, we looked at some previous research and found that Brown and Zare had developed models for canopy temperature that worked particularly well in Arizona. Our first move was to take the data provided and fit it to these model equations. Here, canopy temperature is represented by T sub C. T sub A is the air temperature. VP is vapor pressure. VPD is the vapor pressure deficit. And the canopy temperature were provided by John Snyder, and the air temperature and VPD were provided by the Georgia WeatherNet site. All data was collected at the Stripling Irrigation Research Park in Camilla, Georgia. And one thing that you'll also notice about this slide is that there are separate equations for the daytime canopy temperature and the nighttime canopy temperature. So first I'll discuss the 2013 data. It was collected during July and August of 2013. There was some data that was excluded due to sensor outages or pesticide applications during that time period. This canopy temperature data was collected using the Smart Crop infrared canopy temperature sensors. And this is just a slide of the July and August precipitation historically going back all the way to before 1900. I think most of us would recall, especially those of us who lived in Georgia, that 2013 was a particularly wet year, and you can it's well demonstrated by this graph. So what did that do? Well, the wet and cloudy conditions caused lower than normal average temperatures for the July through August time frame in 2013 as well. This is a map of historical data, again temperature data for the July through August time frame for 2013. And as you can see, the 2013 temperatures were indeed below normal, well below normal. And this was one initial concern that we had with developing a model fit from that 2013 data. So here's our first try. We took the the Arizona model for the day equation, and we fit the 2013 data with it. We got an R-square value 0.69. This graph shows the actual plot mean for the well-watered experiment and the modeled plot mean versus time. So the temperature data that we're looking at here is from a well-watered plot. The observed canopy temperature data is in pink, and the modeled canopy temperature data is in black. So following that, we took the 2013 data and we fit it to the nighttime equation. This time the results were not that great. The R-square value was only calculated to be 0.35 when we fit it to the Arizona equation, and that's a much lower value than before. Again, this shows the mean canopy temperature data in the pink and the modeled TC data in black. So since those results were not as great as we wanted them to be, we thought, well, we'll just see if we can come up with our own equation using the same basic equation, but just finding some new coefficients for it. We did that using MATLAB, and the results are on this slide. And here's a graph. This time the fits were better. We got much improved R-squared values for the day equation. And there you can see here the mean as before is in pink and the modeled is in black. We did the same thing for the nighttime temperature data. We got a much improved R-squared value of 0.87. And this slide is just a side-by-side comparison of the two equations, of the two models. And you can see with some minor changes to the model coefficients, we get better fits. So we'll move on to the 2014 data. Basically, we did the same thing with that data just to see if our results were halfway repeatable. So this data was collected over a longer time frame, this time from July through September. The canopy temperature data, again, was collected using the Smart Crop infrared sensors. And just as a comparison, you can see that the 2014 precipitation for the July through September time frame was actually a little bit below normal, whereas 2013 was very much above. So this is a large contrast between this time period and the time period in which the data was collected over 2013. So you can see here it affected the temperature a little bit, and the temperatures were more normal for 2013 for the July through September time period. So this time when we used the Arizona model, though, we got a pretty good R-squared value when we fit the Georgia 2014 data to the Arizona model of 0.8. And we got a better R-squared value for the nighttime data as well at 0.83. And as I said before, the mean TC is in pink and the modeled is in black. So we took that same data and we fit it to the 2013 Georgia data, Georgia model coefficients. We got a little bit better fit using the Georgia equation, and we did with the night data as well. And this is just a slide showing, again, the side-by-side comparison and the improved fits between the Arizona model and the Georgia model. So our next steps really in this is to take a weather model. It's the ECMWF forecast model. It's a probabilistic weather model, or the results will be probabilistic in nature. meaning that this type of model spits out several forecasts for each grid point, so we can calculate a probability of the forecast exceeding a temperature threshold. So I think that that'll be valuable in the future. We're going to calculate heat stress units based on that over the 2013 and 2014 time periods, and we're going to compare the actual units accumulated to those accumulated according to the Georgia model, and then finally our forecast. So the end goal will be to generate a cotton heat stress forecast that will hopefully help producers prepare for periods in which their crop may be subject to some high temperature stress. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked at radiation yet. It's certainly been discussed among our group. We may do that in the future, but not yet. And I haven't looked at a day-to-day basis like you're saying.
And, yep. As you have the revised equation, with the Arizona equation, you definitely missed peaks and you missed the lows. Mm-hmm. But then with the revised equation, you do a better job, particularly in the middle of the season, but not on the shoulders.
Right. It makes right. That it makes sense what you're saying, and I'm not sure how to exactly do that, like you're saying, but that does make some sense. Right, so from the Brown paper, I think it was an average over a 24-hour period of 82.4, and that's the entire daytime and nighttime, okay, average. Right. So anything above that over a daily period is what Brown considered under stress. Our group has talked more about coming up with some different numbers for daytime to differentiate the daytime stress and nighttime stress. So we've talked about coming up with some different numbers and not just one number for an entire day.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.